not just anybody. You know I need someone. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. But now these days are gone, I'm not so self-assured. Now I find a change of mind and open up the doors.
Changed in a lot of different ways. Well, hello, everybody. I'm Beatty Cohn-Verettos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beatty Show. And for those of you who may be tuning in for the very first time, I am a psychotherapist, just one of those, a sex therapist, and the author of a groundbreaking book, a book that I wish that I had had when I began my own dating and relationship life. Believe me, the book would have made my own life and dating and love experiences that much easier. The book actually is For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And yes, I'm also the advice columnist for Dance Papers in the Hamptons, and I'm an expert guest on television and radio. But I think of all the things that I do, whether it's speaking, or television or hosting the Ask Beatty Show, I think my real passion is what goes on in my private practice in New York City and in East Hampton. And I can hardly believe that I have been practicing in private practice as a psychotherapist for over 35 years. It's amazing where the time has gone. In fact, it was interesting yesterday. There was a memorial for a friend of mine who I grew up with in Winnipeg, Vivian Silver. And I don't know how many of you have been following the Israel, the Hamas, the terrible war that is going on in the Middle East. But Vivian was a peace activist known around the world. And unfortunately, on October the 7th, she was murdered. So there was this memorial in New York City yesterday. And at the memorial were professors from McGill University, where I did all of my training. And, you know, I was saying to one of my former teachers, it's amazing. We had a great education, a great beginning, a great foundation. And I feel so privileged that I have been able to meet and treat really thousands of people who in my personal life that I would have never, ever had an opportunity to encounter. And I don't know how many of you know, but I grew up in an Orthodox Winnipeg, Canada, Jewish home. And here, after all of these years, you know, being able to meet people and treat people who have presented with every single conceivable kind of mental health issue. And for me, it's been a privilege. And, you know, as I say to you every single week on the Ask Beatty Show, you know, the show is about empowerment. It's not about me. It's not about the books. It's not about the columns. And I really, really hope that in talking about mental health and relationships and sexuality, that every week that there may be some small little thing that I've said that can really make a difference in your life, whether or not it's thinking about things that you never thought before, reaching out to people who perhaps you've either neglected to talk to or reach out to, or the need to make amends or to apologize. Or perhaps for yourself, you realize in talking to the show, because we talk about early child sexual abuse and a lot of issues, of course, stemming from our own family of origin. Perhaps you've thought to yourself, maybe one week or the next week after listening to the show, that you have some unfinished business, what I call skeletons in the closet, that need to be acknowledged and addressed and resolved as best as we can, of course, even though we can't change our history. So for me, this is what my hope is that this show really is a show of empowerment and education for you, so that hopefully you will be able to live your life in ways that are truly in your best interest, and that you will live your life in a safe way. Well, today we are going to be talking about the Golden Bachelor, and I have an amazing guest who I'm going to be introducing in a couple of minutes. Now, I'm sure that you are all aware. I mean, 7.13 million Americans were tuning into the drama of the Golden Bachelor. And I believe that the Golden Bachelor, they scammed. He scammed. The show scammed America. And we let him get away with it. When you think about it, America is ready, was ready for a long overdue good news, feel good story. It was time to start living and loving again, time to take chances again and win again. The new Golden Bachelor show came along at the perfect time, starting out with 22 women, ranging in age from 60 to 75. And one, of course, was to be eventually chosen by the Golden Bachelor, Gary Turner, the 72-year-old, handsome, emotional, communicative, seemingly sensitive and vulnerable, seemingly open and engagingly honest, the widower who told America that he hadn't had a date in 45 years, but was ready for love again. And we really fell for the show. And as I say, 7.13 million Americans tuned in to view the drama. So what happened? Well, it turned out that America was to be crushed again. Gerry Turner, our Golden Bachelor, proved to be a liar and had misrepresented himself or was misrepresented by executives and producers, we don't know, of the show, and had been apparently abusive, psychological, and physically to a past girlfriend. The Hollywood Reporter and a variety of other news outlets reported just in the last couple of weeks that not only had he not kissed a woman in 45 years, but that he began dating a woman who identified herself as Carolyn, just a couple of months after his wife died, and subsequently lived with her for almost 2 years in his Indiana home. And apparently, there was a lot of drama that went on in their relationship. So during the course of the story breaking, I'm looking online to see whether there's anybody at all who's commenting on the lies and on the misrepresentations. Well, I found one person, and that person is my guest today, Dr. Carol Lieberman. And Dr. Lieberman is a board certified Beverly Hills psychiatrist and an award-winning and best-selling author, including of Bad Boys, Why We Love Them and How to Live with Them and When to Leave Them, and Bad Girls, Why Men Love Them and How Good Girls Can Learn Their Secrets. Dr. Lieberman was trained at NYU Bellevue and at Anna Freud's London Clinic. She has served on the clinical faculty of UCLA's Neuropsychiatric Institute for years. And when Dr. Carol isn't seeing patients or testifying at trials as a forensic psychiatrist expert witness, she's working as a three-time Emmy-honored TV personality who has appeared on Oprah and the Today Show and Good Morning America and CNN and Fox News and HLN and ET and ABC and CBS and NBC and many, many more networks and shows. And additionally, Dr. Carol hosts two radio shows, podcasts, and travels the world speaking about her books. So, Dr. Lieberman, welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm so glad to finally actually meet you, even though we are on video here.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So what do you make of all of this? The misrepresentations, the scams, you and me, it seems we're the only people in the country who seem to be concerned, worried about Teresa, the chosen one. What are your thoughts on all of this?
Oh, yes. The more I learn about The Bachelor, The Golden Bachelor, the more worried I am for Teresa. You know, she right now is feeling all excited. She won over all these other women. Of course, you're going to feel excited and flattered and everything else. But all that glitters is not gold, she is going to soon find out. I just hope she finds out before she marries him, which is due to be January 4th. They're, of course, doing a big television extravaganza of the wedding. And I put out a press release soon after The Bachelor when I started looking into everybody says his name differently. It's supposed to be Gary, like dairy. I don't know how, but anyhow, so I put out five reasons why she shouldn't marry him. The first one
Okay, let's hear.
was the Freudian slip in his proposal. You remember that he said, which was, Freud was right. I studied with Anna Freud, as you mentioned, and actually, I became a psychiatrist because of reading Freud. Freudian slips are really true. They do reveal an unconscious reality, people laugh over them and try to get a little embarrassed and all that, but really, it's because it's revealing what's inside, And so he said something like, "Teresa, you're not the person that I can live with, or you're not the right person for me." It was some kind of something like
Right.
that. Then he paused and he said, he changed it, and he said, "Teresa, you are the person I can't live without." Now
Right.
she laughed and she, tried to make smooth it out, make it okay, like make it this is oh, this is so cute. But really, considering that he had told at least two other women that he loved them too, I don't think that she should just fluff over it, because I think it meant that either he really didn't want to marry her. He liked one of the others better, like Leslie, the second runner-up, I mean, or first runner-up, or the other one, Faith. And so really, he was either ambivalent, maybe he wanted to marry
Right.
one of those, or he just was ambivalent about marrying her. And I'll get back to that, some things that I discovered. I mean, people. Well, I'll get to that. Anyway, this number two reason why she shouldn't marry him. Leslie Thema, the first runner up, she talks about how he told her he loved her, and he talked about they made plans together, what they were going to do after the show. Now, of course, he may have been just trying to seduce her on that night, that they had together, but it could have been the truth that he really did want to marry her. And apparently, he changed his mind on that last night that he had with Teresa. Now, the good question is why he changed his mind at the last minute. One is, and she said, I've been finding these quotes. It's like really, she talked about how she knocked his socks off on the
Right.
night that they were together in that room. And okay, so she. She pleasured him sexually, presumably in a way that changed his mind. Or was it that he's admitted that in that last night, she told him about her work, more about what she does. And of course, clearly he not only felt like she was probably the woman who has the most money of all the ladies on the show. Because her wealth has been estimated as between 500,000 to a million.
Right.
And but also so that was the other part of why he picked her. Now he presented himself, the show presented himself as this restaurateur, like this fancy retired restaurateur, like, you know, some kind of fancy restaurant, you would think, right? And he actually only owned a Mixter Quick hamburger franchise. He sold it in 1985. You know, it was an In-N-Out, like a McDonald's,
Right.
and he had actually worked there for years. When at, during high school, after high school, he worked his way up, in other words, to owning it, which, you know, is, you can applaud that. That's ambitious and that's nice. But he, not the way he, that he, you know, not the way that he was sold to us. And after he retired, he said that he serviced hot tubs. He worked as a maintenance man in a psych clinic, and he did other odd jobs. And he was saying, oh, I only did these things to help people because, you know, he had made all his money, so he wants us to believe, as a restaurateur. And then last but not least, his fifth, the fifth reason I was trying to warn her not to marry him was because of this woman who came out. The Hollywood Reporter did a story, and they found a woman who she calls herself Carolyn because she doesn't want to reveal her identity. But they did a lot of research,
Yes, they
come up
did.
with this,
Yeah, they
and
did.
they just kind of believe some woman calling up and saying these things.
Right.
And so she talked about how, now she met him. This is the, I just came across this part today. That I really, it is really makes one pause all the more. He met her, Carolyn. His wife died in 2017, and he met her when he was working as a maintenance man at the psych clinic. And she was an accountant at the psych clinic, just like Teresa, you know, works in finance, day trading, and all of that. Gee, what a surprise! And so he met her, Carolyn, and then he and his wife moved. They retired and they moved to a place in Indiana, a very quiet town, and by a house by the lake. And then, surprise, surprise, his wife died like the next month. They moved in June, and she died the next month. And she died of a bacterial infection. And in some interview, he said it was a couple of weeks that she was like getting sick over a couple of weeks. And then it turns out that she went to the emergency room. Oh, when she went to the emergency room, by that time, she only had a week more to live. Now, after that, he then contacted Carolyn, who he had met before he and his wife moved to this, you know, retirement home on a lake, and he, you know, asked her to please help him. We wanted to give his wife's clothes to a charity because she had professional clothes, the wife, and he wanted to ha Carolyn to help him, I guess, financially, to help him organize that, the donation, and so on. So he took her to dinner. And it was very soon after that that he was, you know, sending her text after text, very romantic texts, and started dating her, and then had her come out to move with him. She waited for a year. She was dating him for a year, and then he told his her mother he was going to marry her. So she moved in with him in Indiana, and then of course it went downhill. But I mean, you know, when you think about it, he knew Carolyn before his wife died. So I am suspecting that maybe he delayed. I know this is awful, terrible. How dare I say these kinds of things? But when we hear more about what he did with Carolyn, it is not out of the question that he delayed bringing his wife, his love of his life, Tony, married for over 40 years. High school sweethearts, et cetera, maybe, just maybe, he delayed bringing his wife to the ER to get cured of her sudden bacterial infection, so that he could go back and marry, court and marry Carolyn.
The thing that's so interesting is that there's so many red flags. The list just gets longer and longer and longer. I reached out to Teresa. I reached out to Leslie. I reached out, of course, to the producers of ABC. Nothing. No response at all. And I mean, clearly, I mean, Teresa, I call her sort of giddy Teresa, and it's not a put down. And I understand we all want to fall in love and we want to find the person who's going to love us and have this happily ever after, fairy tale ending. But so many red flags that have never, ever been addressed. Listen, Dr. Lieberman, I mean, clearly nobody in the media, other than us, and I have to say, Victoria Schnapps, who is the president of Schnapps Media, where I write the Ask Beauty column in Dan's papers, nobody wants to touch this at all.
Which is very shocking.
Yes.
And I know you told me this before I came on your show. And the only thought I've been trying to think of why.
Right.
And my by the way, my comments, these five reasons in various forms, different forms, have been out in newspapers. I still get with
Yes.
Google alerts. Every day
Right.
I get Google alerts where it's in more and more newspapers. What's trending?
Right.
Hollywood. I'm trying to remember all the different ones. Anyway, all over the country. Let's just put it that way. And yet, and yet, no, I have not gotten any questions from I haven't gotten Teresa to call me. But I think people don't want to ruin this fairy tale. It's kind of
Right.
like a piece of good news with all the with all the bad news that there is in the world.
Right.
Maybe they don't want to spoil the story. I've been quoted as saying, I wrote actually, that it has more red flags than a used car lot on a big sale day.
Yes.
And
Yes.
it is so sorry, so sad because, well, let's just talk a little bit more about Carolyn. Because so here, this woman who really did the right thing in terms of
Right.
waiting a year before she would move in with him and waiting till he told her mother that he would marry her and all that, you would think that it was the right thing to do. But when after a while, well, when she got there to his home, he told her he wanted her to pay half
Yes.
of the
Expenses.
expenses. Yes, he wanted her to pay $1,000 a month, and then she got him down, negotiated him down to 850. But I mean, I wonder, I mean, that is not, I know some people feel that it's reasonable for a man and a woman to share expenses and all that. But that once she gets there and then you tell her this, and also he made her pay for dinners, like when they went to a restaurant, she had to pay him in advance half of it so that then he could pay at the restaurant and he wouldn't be embarrassed and he would look like the big gentleman and all of that. And then, of course, how he dumped her. It was a little bit before his high school reunion, and he told her that she had gained weight and he wasn't going to bring her to the reunion. Now
Looking
she,
like that, looking like that, the
yes,
quote.
looking like that. It was okay to look like that in this small town on the lake, right? But when somebody would, and she said, yes, she had gained about 10 pounds out of stress. Oh, because she kept working. She couldn't find, she here she had this nice job as the accountant in the mental health clinic, and she found some job, but she had to travel an hour each way to find a job close enough to this lake house. And she did it. So she was stressed out. And he told her this, looking like this, yes, I'm not going to take you. She said she gained 10 pounds out of stress, but she wasn't fat by any means. And he told her she had to leave by January. And then she told her boss that she had to leave. And she gave the boss 2 weeks' notice, which she was supposed to do. But after one, I mean, this is the worst part. Well, besides the murder of his first wife, Tony, the next worst part is that he kicked her out. So she fell down. Oh, so she, I left out the big
She
part.
fell
She
down
fell
the
down the
stairs.
stairs. And he accused her of purposely falling down the stairs so that she could have an excuse to stay there longer. And he was worried she was going to sue him, which she should have done, for falling down the stairs in his house. So, but then he wanted her to, he after she told her boss 2 weeks, he made her leave after 1 week. He just made her, he put her out into the
Yes.
snow, basically,
Yes.
and made her stay in a hotel. Now,
Right.
that tells you everything about a man, besides
Everything,
everything else.
everything, everything.
To put a woman out in the snow with it, she was still had, she had surgery on her foot after she fell down the stairs. So she
Yeah.
was had crutches, or a walker, and he pushed her out because for whatever reason he didn't want her living there for another week. I mean, that is all you need to know about this man.
Exactly.
Truly,
Exactly.
you need absolutely nothing.
The thing that is interesting, and I find myself saying this to patients all the time, the problem in this situation is really not Jerry Turner. The problem is it's us, is the women, is the media that we are going along, that we are enabling and we are encouraging and we are not speaking out, and that we are continuing to get swept up in this psychopathic drama. With a man who is, his connection to the psychiatric, places where he worked, he probably should have been a patient there or something. I mean, there's something clearly wrong and off with this man. And yet, we're talking about him, and I keep thinking, with all the self-help books and the talks and the shows and the therapists, we're not doing well. We're not doing well in the world of relationships. We're in a downward spiral. It's like, where are we going? What are we missing? What are women missing that we're continuing to engage in these kinds of dysfunctional, destructive, self-destructive relationships? When are we going to learn? When are we going to wake up? When are we going to open up our eyes and have some impact? I mean, I look, the domestic violence statistics, 3 women are killed every single day, and I'm not blaming the women, but really, right in front of us, as you said, Dr. Lieberman, is all the information that we need to know about Jerry Turner. We don't need to know anymore. And yet, America is allowing and letting him get away, and there's going to be this amazing wedding, I'm sure, on January the 4th.
Yes, it's a
And that's,
fairy tale. It's a fairy tale. We all want to believe in fairy tales.
right.
I mean, I try to think about Teresa. Like, she's obviously a very smart woman, and she was married. Actually, that they had that similarity that she had a very long-term marriage, also about 40 years, and her husband died.
But
So they,
she's not emotionally smart. She's not emotionally smart.
well, no, but but here the only thing that I to try to give her the benefit of the doubt, here she puts herself in this competition, and if you're in a competition like that, you want to win, of course, no matter what kind of schmuck the Golden Bachelor is. You want to come out on top. You want the world to see you as the most attractive, the most charming, adorable, smart, all of these things that you would be picked by the Golden Bachelor. So I would imagine it is hard after all this fuss, and of course they've been continuing to get a lot of media attention,
Right.
even after it was over, and she's looking forward to this big, incredible wedding. And it's very heady,
Seductive.
seductive.
Very seductive.
But she's, wait till she gets home with him and
Right.
he starts telling her the rules.
Well, she is really at risk, and one of the things, that I've certainly suggested, if she does go forward with the wedding, and I'm sure that she will, that she has at least, her lawyer draw up an ironclad
Yes.
prenuptial agreement. I mean, I'm hoping that she's at least going to do that,
Yes.
because clearly he doesn't have the money. And I mean, to protect herself at least legally and financially. But I'm not so sure that somebody like this is going to do that unless she gets pressure from her family and her children to, to wake up and be smart, at least in looking at the money situation.
Yes, I know. I was thinking that too. She's so swept up in this because
Right.
it's, I wonder. You know, if she tried to make him sign a prenup, would he
Right.
call it all off?
Exactly. It's a good question. It's a good question. And the other thing that has really bothered me a lot is that we haven't heard at all from our, perspective and various different associations. I mean, this was a perfect opportunity for the American Psychiatric Association, the NASW, the American Psychological Association, the American Association for Domestic Violence, to at least be talking about this.
Yes.
And our associations have been nowhere, nowhere.
Yes, that is absolutely true. I know they're just kind of letting her be on her own. And it's gonna be I do hope her family puts their foot down or encourages her and tells her. of course, which if you were her family, I mean, you wouldn't want to spoil it for her either, though. So, I mean, it's hard, but I mean, it would be really sad if, and oh, and an additional thing, after this was over, his friends have been talking in the media. Have you seen any of that, where they're
No.
talking about how this went to his head, how he's
No, I'm not surprised. I mean,
Yes, how he's changed since the goal, and he's been buying all kinds of expensive watches and cars, and just kind of like
Interest.
being a celebrity, thinking he's now the big celebrity, which in a way he is, at least for the time
Yes.
being. And how he's changed, and I don't think he's changed. He's just showing his true colors.
Exactly. I always talk about lessons to be learned. And for me, as a woman and a psychotherapist, I mean, it's very depressing actually to be talking about all of this. I mean, you and I agree. I mean, I feel that she really is at risk, not just financially and maybe legally. I mean, clearly, and of course, we can't formally diagnose him because we haven't seen him. But I mean, there's something terribly off with him. I believe that he is a psychopath. And I think that he's gotten away. He's gotten away with what he probably had initially intended to do, which was to scam, as many women as he could. And Leslie, of course, was devastated. And I believe that he's told all these women that he was going to marry them and that he loved them. And of course, there's a lot of naivete and hopes and wishes and dreams on the parts of all of these women that they found their prince charming. But the again, the red flags, the lessons that mental health organizations in America could be teaching people about how to assess, which of course that's what my work is about, how to assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. And he's failing in looking at all the different areas that I've identified. And yet it's a non-issue for America.
Yes. You mean that they're just glossing over it. I want to say, first of all, I have worked on a number of TV reality shows in different ways. I've analyzed them in the media. Like I started out with Survivor and Big Brother when it first started. I was on the news all that each week analyzing that week's session. But I also have worked with reality shows in terms of vetting the people who come on, making sure that that they're not going to have a psychotic break or something like that, or
Right.
and also that they are who they say they are. I mean that the that they are who they say they are generally is done by a lawyer who like looks up like if any arrest records and things like that.
Right.
But and so I'm not I don't know that this Golden Bachelor was ever arrested, but well, actually, he talked about that he had to go through a check from the FBI. They checked all those kinds of things, but they didn't check who he was. Well, actually, there was supposedly someone who was vetting him, but he talked about how he had to fill out a psychological test of like 300 or 400 questions. Well, that's not MMPI. The MMPI has 560 questions or 400, more than that, 560, I believe. I mean, I give the MMPI for my cases. But anyhow, more questions than that. And he talked to this therapist, I presume it was a therapist, for an hour. You can't just talk to a therapist for an hour, and the therapist is supposed to be able to see all these red flags. Not when you're purposely, you know, trying to scam everybody. So obviously he didn't, you know, whoever the therapist was totally blew it. And he got on, and, you know, they wanted, I mean, it might not have been that easy to find a man. I mean, I wonder how many men tried out to be the Golden Bachelor. Here he was, you know, he was 72. He was, you know, he was decent looking for a 72. And he wasn't like overweight, or, I mean, he had an okay body, and he put on the charm. I mean, really, he put on the charm. So I think it was sort of a collusion between the two of them. He scamming everybody, and then the network who wanted to do this show scamming everybody. Okay, well, we'll overlook this and we'll overlook that. And
you think they knew? You think the producers knew? I mean, because that was the one thing that he kept saying. He hadn't kissed anybody in 45 years and he was ready to find love. Do you think, and again, I reached out to one of the Canadian producers. I was hoping, me being the Canadian girl, the kinder, gentler connection, but she didn't call me back either. I wonder whether they knew that this, and hoped that this skeleton in his closet, namely Carol, was not going to come out.
Yes. Well, you know, if they would have done as much research as the Hollywood Reporter,
yes,
they could have found these things out. Now, granted, Carolyn probably came out right after the, you know, she came out after she saw him on The Bachelor, not before. She probably didn't know about it beforehand. But I think certainly before the end of the show they knew. The Hollywood Reporter thing came out relatively early, you know, after the show started. And they of course by then they had put in God knows how much money into the production. They weren't gonna call it quits, but they should have done something. They should have done something to let the women know that he had been kissed.
Exactly. But tell me, in your practice, I mean, if we go back to our clinical work, I mean, do you find that the women and men are getting smarter, or is this just business as usual? I don't find that the women or the men are getting smarter. I think that the need and the desire for the happily ever after story and fairy tale. I mean, when my book came out initially in 2000, my agent and the publisher, this was going to be a New York Times bestselling book, and it should have been, but it was not. It did okay. It did not do great because people I found over the years are not interested in doing an in-depth assessment to find out who somebody is and isn't. It's not sexy. It's not fun. It's not romantic. It's a pain to go through the process, especially, you know, my research found that it takes about a year using my formula to find out who somebody is and isn't. It's like, who wants to spend a year and who wants a formula?
Women lead with their heart.
Right.
Well, you know, in my book, Bad Boys, which he would have fit into very well, and he probably there are a number of different types. I talk about 12 different types of bad boys. He could have fit into a few different categories. But the book was premised upon the fact that women are attracted to bad boys in general based upon the dysfunctional relationship that they have with their father. And I mean, of course, as a Freudian, I would say that, right? So, but to go further, depending upon the kind of dysfunctional relationship that they have with their father, that would draw them attract them to one of 12 types of bad boys. And so when I went on television shows or I go around, doing lectures and so on, sometimes, I remember doing both television and in person, I would say, tell them about, they would tell me about their boyfriend, their bad boy, and I would tell them what kind of father they had. Well, first of all, they would say, my father isn't, I didn't have a dysfunctional relationship with my father. I'm with a bad boy, but not because I had a dysfunctional relationship. And then they'd tell me what kind of bad boy they were with, and I'd tell them what kind of relationship they had with their father, and vice versa. If they would tell me about their father, I would tell them what kind of guys they were attracted to, because it just fits. It makes sense. I'll give you an example. It goes all the way up from the frazzled frog. I connected them to fairy tales, just the
Love
names,
it.
the descriptions. And so the first one was the frazzled frog. And that actually is what we're seeing a lot of these days. These are women whose fathers were absent in their life. Now, either physically absent, like they died, or they got divorced, or they were emotionally absent. And they would be drawn to a kind of guy that I call a frazzled frog, a fixer-upper lover. These would be guys who don't have their life together, don't have a good job, don't they may have an addiction. They need help in putting their life together. These were guys who, what makes a bad boy is their relationship with their mother, their dysfunctional relationship. So these frazzled frogs did not have a very nurturing mother. Okay. And so they're looking for a mother figure, basically. So because today, because of all the divorces that there are more women who have felt abandoned by their father, who then goes off to with another woman and has another family and, doesn't see her as much. And so women are desperate, these kinds of women are desperate to find a guy. And so they think unconsciously, they think that these men who don't have their life together, who are looking for a mother, that if they come and fix up their life and nurture them like their mother didn't, then these men will love them and stay with them forever. The problem is that once they are with them, and get their guy's life together, then the guy swims away.
Because they don't want
He hops to another place because now he's in better shape and he can find another woman. So, I mean, because the whole thing with bad boys is that they're heartbreakers, and I think that I think that's what the Golden Bachelor plans to do. He may not even know it yet, but I think now that he's gotten all this fame and all that, like the friends are saying, he's acting like this big celebrity. He may now more women know about him, and he may have once, even though he's married to Teresa, there may well be women trying to get his attention, and get him away from her.
And I wouldn't trust him for a moment. And as you're talking about, family of origin kinds of dynamics, we don't know anything about his family background, which would be so interesting, right? To see what happened and didn't happen and what the marriage was like. And I mean, that would be incredibly interesting. And I haven't found anything at all about his original family.
Yes, no, I haven't either. I haven't found anything about Teresa's
No,
family.
nothing, nothing. No, it's but again, they're gonna do what they're gonna do, and women are gonna do, and men are gonna do exactly what they're gonna do. And I always talk about, lessons to be learned. What is the takeaway? People who are listening to this show right now, we're gonna put it out all over. Okay, what are they learning? What are they hearing? What are they gonna take away? Are is there going to be something that's going to go off and it's like, yeah, I need to be more careful. Maybe I need to address this red flag. I mean, I wonder, has Teresa sat down with Jerry Turner and questioned him about any of the things that we're talking about? I doubt it.
Oh, I doubt it too. Are you
Yeah.
kidding?
Right.
I mean, one of the things that women need to ask a guy early on, or to take in, maybe you don't have to ask him directly, but you certainly should be on the lookout for signs about this, and that is what kind of relationship they have with their mother. Because that would determine what kind of bad boy, if he is a bad boy, that he is. Now, I somehow doubt that, I don't know if his parents are still alive, but I somehow doubt that Teresa has asked him about his relationship with his mother.
I'm sure. But again, most people don't dig deep. They don't ask about the family of origin. They don't ask about past relationships, like what happened in your relationship and why it succeeded or why it ended. I mean, we aren't taught. And yet, I've found in all the years since 2000, I've given hundreds and hundreds of presentations and talks in person on TV and radio. And yet, I look every single week. I look at the statistics. The three women killed every day, the 73% of couples marrying for the third time, find themselves in front of a divorce court. The kids, I've been consulting in a high school in East Hampton. Dr. Lieberman, the kids are nowhere. They are absolutely nowhere in terms of communication, in terms of relationship education. It frightens me as a mom, as a wife, as a woman, as a therapist. I'm not seeing progress. I'm
Yes.
seeing a lot of regression.
I was talking about these daughters of divorce. They are so needy of male attention, and that's why sex has gone down. The kind they're doing more and more sexual things at younger and younger ages, and just because these girls are so desperate for male attention. Yes, I mean, the thing that has killed love, not killed it, I don't want to think that love is dead, but the thing that has made dating and marriage and all that harder is the dating apps. This idea that you don't have to try to make things work with anybody if they're, if they, you don't like, you go on a date maybe it's the second or third or the 10th date and they say something you don't like or they're wearing clothes you don't like. Okay, I'm going to go back to the dating app and swipe right. I mean, it's like people are dispensable.
Very, I mean, ghosting, and just like that, you're gone, and they're gone. And talking about it just like that, I was trying to reach Sarah Jessica Parker, who I am, man in the Hamptons. Anyways, that would be another show that could have potentially, even though they're filming, tackled this sort of thing, that we're talking about. But for whatever reasons, I mean, again, other than you and Victoria, so I mean, nobody has stepped up, which I do find a little surprising. I mean, there has to be somebody other than you and me and Victoria Schnapps who really care about the issue. For some reason, everybody has chosen to be silent.
Yes, it really, I mean, I can't think of another reason other than this is the one seemed like the we all love fairy tales no matter how old we are, and we all want to believe that we can still find our prince at whatever age. And so nobody wants to be the one to say the emperor has no clothes.
And that's exactly what needs to be said. No, it's going to be interesting how this is going to play out. I mean, if they get married, I wouldn't give this marriage a couple of years. I really wouldn't. I think that he's so dishonest. He's so manipulative. I think I don't think all of a sudden, because he's going to be marrying Teresa, that any of this is really going to change. I think it's going to play out in different ways, and I do feel that she is at risk. I really do. Not physically, but emotionally.
And she better not put on a pound.
She better not put on a pound.
She'll be
Exactly.
gone. And they better not buy a house with stairs.
Yeah. mean, you're in Beverly Hills with your patients. Are women, are you finding that women are just completely disgusted? I mean, there've been so many, pieces in the New York Times. Let's forget about marriage. Let's forget about men. There's no good men, which I believe that there are plenty of good men. I mean, are you finding that the dating scene and the love scene, in your own practice and with people that you know, that people are as just frustrated and upset and disappointed as the statistics are really telling us?
Yes. I mean, that isn't to say not everybody. There are people who find their love match. The problem is, another problem besides like the dating apps, is that people, we've been sold a bill of goods by the advertisers that if a woman doesn't look like Barbie, or a man, doesn't have an important job or a job where he makes a lot of money or something that you don't pay attention to them. They don't seem like reasonable possibilities. People are looking for the wrong things in love, in their match. If they looked more for what's in the person's heart rather than what's in their pocketbook or what's what they look like, they could find love.
Exactly. No, that's what I found. I mean, I've identified three things that we all need to do to find love and to never make a mistake of love. And the first thing is getting ourselves into a good place emotionally, psychologically, psychiatrically, working out our stuff. Number two, learning what the, as you say, the actual ingredients are that go into a healthy, happy, successful relationship. And I find most people don't know. And of course, number three is doing a good assessment, really being open to taking your time and playing out the points of the match as a tennis player here, and looking at the reality of the situation that you're in rather than just the fantasy. And hopefully, with shows like this, with everything that you're doing and I'm trying to do, maybe in some little way, we can continue to make a difference. But I've been very frustrated, with, what's going on in the world of relationships, domestic violence, and where I see the trajectory is a downward movement. And I don't see that things are getting better. And that scares me as a woman.
Yes, no, I don't. I think especially with the pandemic, when people were in lockdown, I mean, in some ways I was hoping that it would get better because people were doing dates, on Zoom and so on, so you could get to know the person a little better. But an equal number of people who were doing that got divorces. There was like a mass of divorces after the pandemic because when people were living with each other, when the spouses were cooped up together, they realized either that they didn't have anything in common anymore, that familiarity breeds contempt, all these different things. And when the gates opened, so did the divorce lawyer visits.
I'm looking at the clock. I cannot even believe the time. I mean, I could just go on and on, and we're going to have to continue to connect, in some fashion. I mean, I want to thank you so much, for responding. I mean, when I saw you quoted in a couple of these magazines, I thought, well, maybe she's going to respond. Nobody else has responded. And I, what you've had to say, of course, is so important. And again, I want to thank you for, for coming on the show and for connecting and for being open and wise. And for people who want to go to your website, what is your website, Dr. Lieberman?
Well, let's see. I have three different websites, but the one drcarol.com, which is drcarole.com. They can find my books there, and of course on Amazon also. And then I have expert witness forensicpsychiatrist.com in case someone is in a divorce thinking about it. I do a lot of divorce and custody cases, and of course that's so sad with the impact on the children.
Well, I'm going to put all of this on the link so that people who will be able to listen to the show around the world will have all of your contact information. Anyways, this was great. I'm so glad to have met you. Let's be in touch. And
Absolutely.
have a good holiday, okay?
Thank you. You too.
Okay.
It's a pleasure.
Take care. Take care. Well, everybody, it is 3:55 here in very, very rainy New York City. And that was Dr. Carol Lieberman. And I hope that you will go to the Progressive Radio Network archives and you will listen. And you will listen not just once, but you'll listen a couple of times to our show. And I want to leave you with my two weekly messages. Yes, these are messages that I've been giving you now for almost 11 years here on the show. The first is to please do everything that you possibly do to love yourself and to make sure, as best as you can, that you are living your life in ways that are really, really in your best interest. You need to be smart. And secondly, of course, we all need to do a much, 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 much better job in learning to love each other, to respect each other, despite our differences. So I wish you all a very, very, very happy holiday. And hopefully you're all going to be able to, wind down and take some time. And remember, everyone, in the final analysis, it's not about the bigger, better, more, the house, the money. It is about the quality of our relationships. And we have to be very, very careful who we let into our lives. So again, thank you so much for listening. The show, of course, is going to be continuing in 2024. So take care of yourself, take care of those that you love, and I will talk with you. Actually, next Monday is going to be Christmas Day, so there will not be a live show, but we'll talk in a couple of weeks. So take care, be well, be good to yourself, and be good to others. Bye-bye, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye.
Somebody help, not just anybody. Help. You know I need someone.